The good news of God's love according to Matthew.
Glory to you, Lord.
In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising, and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him, and calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word, so that I may also go and pay him homage." When they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. This is the gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O
Christ. Please be seated. Once again, the church geek in me has to point out that this is a story we only get in the Gospel of Matthew. But it has some interesting links to what we read in the Gospel of Luke. The shepherds are only mentioned in Luke. The wise men are only mentioned in Matthew. The shepherds find Jesus lying in a manger. The wise men find him in a house, the home of Mary and Joseph in Bethlehem. In Luke's Gospel, an angel announces the birth of the Savior to some shepherds. In Matthew's gospel, it's the wise men who announce to the people of Jerusalem that their new king has been born. The angels proclaim peace on earth. The wise men inadvertently set off a campaign of violence and terror. There's a lot we don't know about them, but they weren't kings. And we shouldn't assume that there were three of them just because they brought three gifts. We don't have to assume they were all men. And there's really no reason to think they arrived on camels, because the gospel doesn't mention that. The word for wise man is magi, from which we get the word magician. They were astronomers, maybe even astrologers, who looked to the stars for revelation. They didn't worship the God of Israel. They had no knowledge of the Hebrew scriptures. They knew about the movements of the stars, and it is through the stars that the God of creation chooses to reveal to them the birth of Jesus. Because when a certain star arose, maybe a new one, maybe a big one, maybe not, they knew that a very special king had been born. The fact that they didn't just offer him gold showed that they knew he was going to be different from every other king. The frankincense showed that he was worthy of worship, and the ointment of myrrh connected him to healing, to suffering, and to death. Somehow, the Magi knew that he was the king of the Jews, or perhaps king of the Judeans, so they went to Jerusalem to find him. There's no indication in the text that they followed the star to Jerusalem. It was just the place where they expected to find a Judean king. Oh, and find one they did. Herod was not born king of the Judeans. He was appointed to the job by the Roman emperor, and he was kept in power by the armies of Rome. He was a ruthless man, willing to do just about anything to hold on to his position. He'd already killed one of his wives and a couple of his sons, which may be why, when Herod was frightened, all of Jerusalem got nervous. The chief priests and the scribes only added to his insecurity when they told him the Messiah would be a ruler who would truly shepherd God's people. We know how Herod responded to that news by orchestrating the slaughter of every boy who might possibly be that long-awaited king. Psalm 72 is a prayer that the people of Judah would offer whenever a new king was crowned to rule over them, a prayer that God would bestow God's own sense of justice and righteousness upon the heart and the mind of this all-too-human ruler, a prayer that the ruler would govern in righteousness, in a sense of relationship between himself and the people, and that justice would be provided for the poorest and most vulnerable of the people. Such righteousness and justice would cause the whole nation to enjoy peace and prosperity. Such a ruler would then be honored by the other rulers of nations, not because of wealth or military strength, but because of their compassion for the poor and the oppressed. The wise men weren't kings, but they did what the prophet Isaiah hoped all of the world's rulers and leaders would do: kneel, submit, and offer worship to God. It's easy to see how a passage from Isaiah that mentions kings, camels, gold, frankincense, and a bright light would come to be associated with the day of Epiphany. But the prophet wasn't predicting the journey of the wise men. His words of hope and encouragement were offered to the people of Judah after they had returned from their exile in Babylon to try and restore a devastated city and its temple. The Hebrew grammar tells us that his message is addressed to the city of Jerusalem, which is personified as a woman. It is about her glory at some undefined future date. At a time when darkness begins to spread over the whole earth, God's light will shine upon her. Nations and rulers will be drawn to her. All of her scattered children will return to her. Wealth will pour into the city so that God's temple can be restored to its glory. The whole earth will proclaim the praises of God. The author of Matthew's gospel may have hoped that Isaiah's words were a prediction of what was going to happen when Jesus was born. The light of a star did guide foreigners to Jerusalem. They brought gold and frankincense along with myrrh. But if this is a prediction of the future, it's a future that has not yet been realized. We are still longing for the day when the whole earth will proclaim the praises of its creator. The world continues to be covered in darkness. People continue to hoard their wealth and their power for themselves. The birth of Jesus by itself did not change the world. It's only the divine power of Jesus poured into the hearts and minds of people of faith that will transform the world into what it is meant to be. The letter to the Ephesians describes God's plan to reconcile the whole universe to its creator. The Apostle Paul, who was raised to believe that the Israelites were God's only chosen people, learned by an epiphany revelation that God's plan had always been to draw all of humanity into one family, a family that had been founded by the Jewish people. God commissioned Paul to take this message of welcome and inclusion to non-Jewish people throughout the Roman Empire. Paul's task was not to convince Jewish people that Jesus was their promised Messiah. That task was being done by others. Paul's job was to proclaim Jesus as the Savior of the whole human race. The end game for Paul is that the rich variety of the Christian church, its diversity and its harmony, will then be a revelation to the cosmic powers that hold creation in bondage. They are the rulers and authorities in the heavenly places who exert their influence upon the rulers and authorities of the earth. The task given to us as the Church of Jesus Christ is to work for unity and to work for reconciliation between diverse individuals and diverse groups, to overcome every force that tries to divide people into factions that cannot coexist. It is our calling in places like Israel and Gaza, and in places of conflict like our own nation. Do we have the courage to see people of different races, different classes, different understandings of God, different political ideologies as members of our family with whom we need to achieve harmony? We don't have to pray for a king who might embody God's righteousness. We have the power to choose the leaders who will ensure justice and prosperity for all and protect and provide for the most vulnerable among us. We have the obligation to reject anyone who promotes violence, hatred, and fear in any desperate attempt to hold on to power. Even as darkness continues to cover the whole earth, God's light arises within us. We are encouraged to rise from our complacency or fear and to shine brightly in the world, attracting people to the God who loves them. From within the walls of the church, we are called to offer an epiphany to the rest of the human family. A revelation of what God intends, a world in which justice and peace are firmly established and intertwined for the good of all.